You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 240.
Hello, everybody, to the show. We are once again here to bring you some thoughts about board gaming with your kids. This is episode 240 of the Family Gamers Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And, of course, I have a fact about the number 240.
Okay.
I know it's a shock.
Lay it on me.
Okay. So, according to the records of the Grand Historian, which was a Chinese history, like an anthology of Chinese history, in May of 240 BC.
That's a long time ago.
Chinese astronomers make the first recorded observation of Halley's Comet.
Wow.
I don't know how they knew that long ago that it was a particular comet that would then come back around and, you know, that kind of thing.
It's probably that 60 years later, they went, oh, hey, this looks a lot like that thing. Or, like, you need a couple of cycles before you realize that it's cycling.
I mean, did they have telescopes of some sort? Like, what? How do you see it well enough to know it's the same thing that long ago?
Fair enough. I think after maybe a couple of cycles, which at that point is many, many generations, but like, oh, hey, somebody looks back and says, there's a pattern here. There's a big comet in the sky every 70 years or something like that.
Yeah, but again, the same person's not seeing it and they can't take pictures and they don't have telescopes.
Right, which is why I say, like, you don't know the first time you see it. And you probably don't even know the second time or even the third time that you see it. It's like the fifth or sixth time somebody notices, like, there's a pattern here.
I think it's cool that they figured it out. I don't know how they figured it out. If there's any Chinese historians listening to the podcast, I would love to know how they figured this kind of thing out. But yeah, so that was, 2,200 years ago.
Yeah.
That they first recorded observing Halley's Comet.
Of course, they didn't know it was Halley's Comet yet.
Right. I don't know who named Halley's Comet. Somebody named Halley.
A guy named Halley in the 1800s.
No. But anyway, that is my fact about the number 240. Another thing I know is that the Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial.
Recently, a listener asked about how to balance financial priorities now versus ones down the road, like college savings and retirement. First and foremost, you want a stable foundation, which means an adequate emergency fund and manageable debt. Once that's taken care of, consider the priorities and costs of each goal. Ask yourself if you had to pick a more stable retirement or a better university option for your children, which one is your priority? Then start saving toward your top priorities, giving the most attention to the top one or two, but putting at least a little bit of funding into other goals. The trick is to get to a point where you're saving some for the near future, some for the midterm, and some for long-term. You don't want to put all of your savings toward long-term goals and not have any fun along the way. And at the same time, you need to have something saved for retirement. Otherwise, you'll have to live off whatever Social Security you've been able to earn, which won't leave much room for fun in the future. If you want to talk to an expert about prioritizing your goals and saving for the future, go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to set up a meeting.
Thanks so much to First Move Financial for sponsoring this episode of the show. So, Anitra, what are we going to do this week?
We are going to talk about Room to Grow.
Okay. Yes, we've done our Room to Grow segment a few times. This week, we are going to talk about Roll and Write games. And, of course, I have to say this up front. Nick Martinelli has been giving me the hardest time about Roll and Writes because he has been a huge Roll and Write fan for a long time. You've been a big Roll and Write fan for a long time. And I'm finally coming along for the ride.
Well, and it helps that we've played enough different kinds now that we have some basis to make recommendations on.
Yeah, we have double-digit Roll and Writes in our house.
Yes.
And that doesn't count the ones that we've cycled through. So, yeah, we have played a fair number of Roll and Writes at this point. And I mean, this was a really fun conversation between you and me, and I'm looking forward to getting into it in the second half of the show.
All right. But first, let's talk about what we've been playing.
Yeah, let's do that.
So you shared a picture on Twitter of the five of us playing The Key, Sabotage at Lucky Llama Land.
I did. So we were having a deep debate this week as to whether or not we wanted to cover deduction games or roll and write games. This week is roll and write. If you want to know what our thoughts are on Room to Grow for deduction, there's lots of different ways that you can do that. Pay attention at the end of the show. We'll talk about all the different ways you can get a hold of us. The Key from Haba is a deduction game.
Yeah, and it reminds me a lot of those logic puzzles that maybe you played in activity books. Yep. as a kid or a young adult.
That kind of look like steps almost.
Grids.
The weird grid. Yeah. Thing. Yeah. It's super interesting the way that this is put together.
Yeah. So you're looking for combinations. There are three possible thieves, three possible weapons, tools, and three rides that were sabotaged at Lucky Llama Land.
And there's three different times that they were done.
Yeah. Three different days.
Yep.
And you're trying to figure out all of those things. So who did what with what? On one day.
So the way the game starts is somebody picks a key. There's, I think, 9 keys in the game. And depending on what color key you pick, that's the mystery that you're going to be solving. So there's 9 mysteries in the box.
This plays out in real time that everybody is drawing cards from the center. I don't know, pile, mess.
Yeah, it's you just spread all the cards out face down on the table. It's kind of great because it makes it really easy.
You check first and make sure that it's the right color that you need. But then each one gives you some kind of clue. Maybe it's some combination of person and weapon, or person and day, or things like that.
So one of the things I think is really cool about this is all of the cards on their backs have a grid of 9 squares, and it's not like only one square is like colored in.
Yeah.
So lots of these clues will fit multiple mysteries, which I find just really fascinating. Like, I'm sure they used a computer to figure this out, but like, it blows my mind that they could orchestrate these clues and all these pieces in such a way that you can use the same clue for 2 completely different mysteries. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The big takeaway for us on this is, I mean, Andrew and I both love these kind of logic puzzles, so the two of us had a great time. Our kids did horribly and didn't figure out the mystery, but they still had fun doing it. So that was good. And we promised that the next time we would do teams with, you know, mom on one team and dad on the other team, so they can see a little bit more of how to piece these clues together for the future.
Right. Because this is not a basic deduction game. I mean, it's not super complex. The rules are fairly simple, but you're still managing lots of different pieces. And it can be fairly easy to lose track if you have no training in how to figure deduction stuff out.
Do this kind of puzzle.
And what we actually did, what I did with the boys afterwards is I brought them to my iPad where I have this deduction game that I've literally had for 20 years.
Ancient computer game.
It's so old. I mean, I had it on Windows 3.1. That's how old this thing is. And
but somebody ported it into iOS, which is great. Yeah.
So I play, it's called Sherlock. It's by Everett Kayser Software Games people. I usually play the 6x6 grids, and it's got all these logical like hint things, and it's just a good brain exercise. But I brought it all the way down to 4x4, which is super easy to burn through them. But I used it to kind of allow the kids to put some pieces of deduction together to solve something that isn't immediately obvious. And those are the building block tools that you kind of need for a game like The Key.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy this, and we're going to play this more. We are going to review this game, but I don't think this is a game that you can just sit down and just play with your kids and have them be like, yep, I got deduction, I get it. Unless they're really logical and sequential and stuff like that. Asher, our middle child, he's the guy who's going to be a programmer. He loves board games, all this stuff. And even though he ended up with the wrong answers, you could tell that he was getting the systematic.
He was starting to figure out how to fit it all together.
Putting the pieces together, right? And I don't think that comes from nowhere with a kid. And sure. So you have to start with something. You have to give kids the building blocks to get there. And so if we were to do Room to Grow, for example, the first game would not be The Key.
Yeah,
even though it's
not
a Haba game.
Yes.
And the reason why I guess I'm talking about this is a Haba game and yet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really fun. I'm looking forward to playing it some more. I just think it's super clever the way that they've woven all these things together.
Yeah, I do too.
I really, really did enjoy it.
So that was the key sabotage at Lucky Llama Land from HABA. You and I and Asher also tried out King of 12, which is this cool little card play bluffing sort of game in the same vein as Love Letter or Brave Rats or something like that, where everybody is playing a card at the same time. You reveal, and then things happen. But if any two players play the same card, their cards completely cancel out.
The thing that's really interesting about this is that everybody rolls a d12 at the beginning of the round, and that is kind of the catalyst for all of your other stuff.
Yeah, the number on your die. You're almost always trying to have the highest number of everybody so that you can win a hand, I guess you would call it. But there are so many ways to manipulate that with the cards. You can make your number higher. You can make your number lower. You can make other people do things. You can change the win condition so that the lowest number wins this hand.
And, you know, these are all things that probably sound pretty familiar if you've played a game like Brave Rats or like Love Letter or something like this. And it definitely feels like those games, but it has a twist with the 12-sided die. The, you know, it's King of 12, and that's obviously the reference there. I like the art in this game as well. It's really like vibrant, beautiful art, but it's in a, I don't know, very blank palette. So it really draws your eye to the focus of the picture, like the character that's on the card.
The character on each card.
Like the card is like 80% white, but there's the one character. And so it's not like this full, rich, you know, palette of art kind of thing. It's just like, it's very, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. Stoic is not the word I'm looking for here, but there's something almost serene about the way the art appears kind of to me, because it's just a simple character on a white background. And I like it.
The characters themselves are really rich, but there's nothing else there to distract from each character.
It's a stylistic decision that they made that I actually really like,
yeah,
which is, I guess, why I'm saying it. And there's start cards that everybody will use, but there's a bunch of extra stuff in the box as well. So there definitely is some replayability on this one.
We're going to be able to try it with different combinations of cards and see how things change. So it's not quite as samey as it might be otherwise, I guess. That's King of 12 from Lucky Duck Games.
Yep, that's right.
It's either out now or coming out soon.
Something like that.
Lots of games to be reviewed in our list this week. Speaking of which, Asher and I tried out Hedgehog Haberdash, which is adorable. This is a HABA game in your traditional HABA game style. It is for ages 3 and up. It is a simple matching game with a little tiny bit of memory involved. I am really looking forward to playing this with a friendly preschooler I know to see if it is actually appropriate for that age range, because it seems like it, but it's getting harder for me to tell since our youngest is now in first grade and reading.
So that is Hedgehog Haberdash from HABA. We also pulled in both of the older kids and played a 4-player game of Athenium.
Yeah, Athenium Mystic Library.
I continue to really enjoy this game. It's a spatial puzzle with drafting. Those are things I like.
Yeah.
So I like the game.
Yeah, I am not nearly as good at the spatial puzzle, but thankfully Athenium gives you ways to fix your mistakes or rearrange stuff, at least occasionally. So you can be less than great at the spatial puzzle, but still make good decisions on what's going to get you points and work it out that way. I really like that about the game. Our review for that should be up as you hear this podcast. So go check it out on the Family Gamers website. Another game that we will be reviewing in a little while is called Match 5 from Synapses Games and brought to the US by Luma Imports. Match 5 feels a lot like a Scattergories or a little bit like Blank Slate, because the whole point of this is that you're rolling dice at the very beginning of the round. Each die face ends up representing some concept like drinkable or books or characters or fantasy. And what you're trying to do is for each possible pair of dice out of these 5 dice, you want to come up with a word that works for both. So for example, I at one point had one die showing liquid and another die showing can hold in your hand. And I wrote down mercury and our son wrote down oobleck.
I mean, I was thinking oobleck.
And you're trying to come up with those sort of connections for as many of the, I think it's 10 different combinations that you can. Here's where the real fun comes in. You get a point if your word is good or your concept is good and everybody else agrees it's good. You get 2 points if your concept, word, whatever phrase matches somebody else at the table. So not only are you trying to come up with words for everything, you're also trying to come up with the same ones that other people would, like a blank slate or a wavelength or something like that. You're trying to get on the same wavelength with the other people at the table.
Like medium.
Yeah, a little bit like that.
Sounds a lot like medium.
Yeah. It's really neat. Rolling the dice gives a nice way to randomize it every round. And there are 2 complete sets of dice that you can mix and match. And each individual die has 2 different boards so that the same symbol could mean 1 of 2 different things.
A lot of replayability there. A
lot of replayability. Really nice party style word game.
All right. I like it. And that is Match 5 from Synapses Games. Let's see, what else is on my list? So I had my bi-weekly Pandemic Legacy Season 0 session last night.
Yes, you did.
We survived April in April.
Woohoo!
So we will play May in May. So that's good. And I'm not going to say anything else about the Pandemic Legacy Season 0.
Okay.
For obvious reasons. We also played Fleet the Dice Game.
Yay!
Which is a roll and write. We will talk about it later. That's all I'm going to say about that. I did, since I knew I was bringing it, sit down and actually laminate 4 sets of sheets. I know. And let me tell you, laminated sheets with wet erase marker on them are the best things ever because you can just walk over to the sink and just turn it on and it just goes away.
All the ink just goes away.
You just have to make sure that you laminate it well so that all the edges are sealed. Ruined.
But there are lots of sheets in the box, so that'll be okay.
Well, no, I didn't ruin one. I did fine. But it's certainly going to make them last a lot longer,
mm-hmm.
and that's great. And, you know, I mean, Pinchback and Riddle can have my money for another set of sheets if that comes up. Like, I don't really care about
that.
It's a fantastic game. So, really,
it's
really
a good game.
Glad to be able to play that. And speaking of relatively complex roll and writes, we have both played Merchants of Magic.
We have. This is by Rock Manor Games, and it is a fairly complex roll and write.
Yeah, so this is not out yet. These are basically production sample copies.
Sure.
So the game is not currently available. It will be available soon. I think the goal for us is to have our review out around the time the game comes out. But we can still talk about it.
Yeah, well, so the short version is, if you like reasonably complicated roll and writes with a nice, strong theme to them, this will work for you.
Let me put it to you like this. If you like Fleet the Dice Game and Role Player, you need to buy it.
Andrew is exactly the target market for this game.
Yes, this game is very fun. So what happens is every turn, the first player, but it doesn't really matter who the first player
some player.
Like, literally, there's no drafting, so there's no order, so it doesn't matter. But a player rolls 4 dice. There is a 6-sided die, an 8-sided die, a 10-sided die, and a 12-sided die. Everybody records those 4 numbers on their player sheet. Everybody picks 2 of them to use in crafting something, either a craft or some kind of magical ability. So they don't call it crafting.
They call it crafting and research. So crafting is basically that you've learned how to make items, weapons, armor, things like that. And research is magical research, that you've researched some magical ability that you can infuse into the items you make.
So what they did with this game, which is really, really interesting, is that on the crafting side and on the research side, there's 3 columns on each side, right? So 6 total.
Mm-hmm.
And for all of these rows, which are all the different things that you can craft or research, there's only certain cross sections that actually have a number in them. So for a Warhammer, which is something that you craft, it turns out that it needs all 3 of the columns, which are different types of items. So like wood and metal and stone or something.
Wood and leather and metal or something like that. Yeah.
So you have to invest 3 numbers that you've selected from your die rolls over the course of your 10 rounds in order to be able to craft a Warhammer.
But then each column can only use numbers from specific dice.
Which is super cool. So like the 6-sided die is basically only for crafting.
Yeah.
It's only usable for those 3. And then basically for the 8-sided die, it's the 2 crafting and the 1 research. And then the 10-sided is the last crafting and 2 research. And then the 12 is just research.
It's just research.
So it's really, really interesting the way this works out, because on the crafting side, all of your thresholds are your die roll needs to be either this or above. And on the research side, it's your diet role needs to be either this or below. And then all of the different things have different values in them. So certain things are like, okay, in order to get this particular thing, like of the orcs, which is, you know,
one of the magical abilities.
Magical ability. I don't know. In arcane, which is the one of the three columns on the research side, I have to roll. It's got to be like the 12-sided die or something, or the 10-sided die, but it has to be like two or less. And it's like, give me a break. Are you kidding me right now? So in this way, the game can actually flex the difficulty of creating certain things.
Yeah, well, there's something on the crafting side which requires an eight or more with the 6-sided die.
Right. Which gets into this other thing, which is die modification with potions, all this other stuff. The game actually moves really quickly because everybody's doing their stuff at the same time. Even faster than something like Fleet, because in Fleet, you have to draft dice.
Right.
In this, you don't. It is 100% synchronous play.
And the very first time I played this, that was exactly what I thought about. It felt like it took longer than Fleet because I spent so much more of the time just staring at my player sheet and being like, where do I put these numbers? Where? Yeah. But I was never limited by anybody else's actions.
Right. And because it's always 10 rounds and it's simultaneous play, it literally doesn't matter how many people play the game.
Yeah, I believe it's 2 to 8 players.
Yeah.
There
is a little bit of movement of cards, but it's something that all happens at once.
Yeah.
And I mean, you could burn through a game of this if everybody knew what they were doing in like 15, 20 minutes. Like, no question, even though it's complicated.
Not if I'm one of the players, because I stare at the paper for way too long.
But it moves. I mean, this
game
moves.
Yeah, it does.
I'm really happy with this game. I really enjoyed playing it. I look forward to playing it again. I sent a message to my Pandemic Legacy group, who always wants Fleet as a chaser, to say, you know, maybe
it's going
to
be a different one next time.
Yeah, you know, because one of the guys is from Cape Cod, so like he really means something to him.
Fair enough.
But I don't think it's the theme necessarily that draws most of those people into the game. It's just a great game. So I don't know. I'm going to try to. I'm going to be a Mergence of Magic pusher.
All right. I will say that you get a lot less of that combo-tastic feel with Mergence of Magic. There are a few opportunities for combos, but they are very few.
So I love... You know what? I don't want to talk about Fleet anymore. Shock. We're going to talk about Fleet later. So I don't want to talk about it anymore. All I'm going to say is, like, sometimes the comboing in Fleet can be a little overwhelming.
Sure. And we'll get to the rest of that later.
We'll talk about that.
I got one more game to mention. Asher and I have been playing some Subatomic from Genius Games. Mm-hmm. So we picked this up at our friendly local game store in their used pile.
Great buy. Yeah. You guys are loving that game.
Oh, yeah. It's really interesting to me to see, you know, my 10-year-old fourth grader who just really learned about atoms 3 or 4 months ago. And he's like, so atoms are made up of smaller things? Okay, sure. And Subatomic is just introducing the concept gently of quarks and how all of the various subatomic pieces fit together, the protons and the neutrons and the electrons. It is a very heavy-duty deck-building game. It definitely seems like it would be best for teenagers and up for exactly that reason. It is not the kind of topic you would normally do with younger kids. It's not a gameplay style you would normally do with younger kids. But it's working for us, and I'm glad that he's enjoying it. It certainly plays a lot more interestingly at two players than Ion does, which is a drafting game. And I think he's finding it more interesting than Periodic, although Periodic has also been pretty good for us. I also really love the art in Subatomic, because the protons are like super positive looking, like very peppy, and the neutrons are neutral. They're blah. And then the electrons are like super cool. They have little shades on and a little like ding.
All right.
So all right. I like it a lot. It provides some much needed humor. And there's a little bit of the history of nuclear physics worked into all of this, because there are special cards that are historical figures that then give you some extra abilities.
Very cool.
Really, really enjoying it. We'll definitely pull it out with nerdy friends in the future. And that's it for this week. So
awesome. All right. Well, that is it for what we have been playing. Before we go to break, let's do just a brief For Science segment.
Okay. For Science it is. I was at the grocery store, and being the kind of cheapskate that I am, I did not pick up a whole lot of Easter candy before Easter, but now it's on sale. So
I think that's fine.
But one of the things I definitely did not want before Easter is this thing called Reese's Peanut Butter Cups Mallow Top. It's a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup topped with like marshmallow cream, except it's hard. I don't know.
Yeah, so I'm holding one of these in my hand. And the bottom half looks like a normal Reese's Peanut Butter Cup.
Yep.
And the peanut butter inside, it's broken in half. It looks a little bit wetter than usual.
It does. I was thinking the same thing.
And then the top, it basically looks like white chocolate. I mean, that's what it looks like.
It actually looks whiter than white chocolate normally is.
Okay, sure. I'm going to eat this because it's melting.
Yeah. Oh, that's weird, man. Oh, I don't like it. Like, I'm not going to spit it out. It's candy, but...
Okay. This is interesting. So, this is basically peanut butter and fluff with some chocolate inside.
Yeah.
Like, if you had some kind of chocolate spread that you included in... I mean, I think there's like a Reese's peanut butter cup, like a Reese's peanut butter and chocolate jar that you can get.
There's not, but I know what you're saying.
I'm certain I've seen something like that before. But anyway, I don't hate it. I mean, but Reese's peanut butter cups are so iconic. I mean, why would you mess with something that's, you know, basically perfection?
I mean, there are some variations that are good. In my opinion, this is not one of them. The marshmallow top is kind of sickly sweet, which I expected because it's marshmallow, but...
Okay, pause.
Yeah.
You don't eat peanut butter and fluff sandwiches.
Yes, I do.
Really?
Yes. I mean, I usually tell myself, like, this is lunch and dessert, but yes, I do.
Yeah, but you don't eat them like I eat them.
No, probably not. There's not very much in this world I eat like you eat.
Ouch.
Except maybe Reese's peanut butter cups.
maybe. No, when I make a peanut butter and fluff sandwich, I make a proper peanut butter and fluff sandwich. Like, if I can't squeeze it too hard or else.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what this tastes like, but with some chocolate inside. It's fine. They made some weird Reese's peanut butter cups in the past. You know, again, I don't know why you would mess with perfection, but otherwise I think it's okay.
I was not a fan. Maybe if you really love marshmallow flavored stuff.
I will say this. Nah. They nailed the marshmallow flavor.
They did.
Like, that's marshmallow. Like, you, even if you don't like the combination, it's chocolate, it's Reese's peanut butter, and it's marshmallow.
It is. I think a big thing for me is that I like marshmallows, but I like marshmallows without anything else being done to them, really, other than maybe roasting them. Marshmallow flavored anything is right out. So that's my problem with this.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, tell you what, we're going to go to a break. We'll fight about it. And when we come back, we're going to welcome our new members to the community, talk about a post that's in the community. I want to make sure some people get to see it. And then we'll get right into our topic.
All right. Let's do that.
We'll be right back.
We're going to talk about Room to Grow, but first we're going to talk about the Family Gamers community.
Yes, we are. So we've got some new community members. So if you have been paying attention, Facebook made some changes to the way they do groups. So if anything is confusing in the Facebook community, please let us know. We'll be happy to take a look and figure things out. So first, we want to welcome Laura John Ritter Flynn. I'm assuming there are two people involved in that Facebook account, but regardless, welcome to the Family Gamers community.
Welcome to Chris Hazen,
Rhoda Crowell,
Jonathan Hamill,
and Nicole Lauer. Head on over to the Family Gamers community at thefamilygamers.com/community and check out the welcome post. Maybe talk a little bit about what you're doing, what you want to find out, how we can help you in the Family Gamers community.
And if you've been a part of the community for a while, say hi.
Absolutely, yeah. Speaking of people who have been part of the community, Charles Ward shared his first post on April 6th. It's a generous offer, and I wanted to point it out. He says, "Hi, folks. I'm making another of my games freely available for you to print and play via my website. I'm not going to list it. You can head over to the community to find that. Please take a look at this little gem. Sky Towers is the name of the game. It's a competitive, family-friendly card game about building towers. Play cards to your tower to make it add up to 21, set it aside, and keep building. player with the most yellow kites on cards from their completed towers and bonus cards wins. But it's not easy. Some cards have abilities, others are tricky to place, and your neighbor's top card will block you. Sky Towers is attractive, accessible, and addictive. This is a great game to play while you wait for your food at a restaurant. We love restaurant games. During recess, when friends come over, or whenever you have 15 minutes to spare. So head over to the Family Gamers community. Check out that post. It's back on April 6th from Charles Ward. Thank you, Charles, so much for sharing this with the community.
It is a very cute looking game, and it looks like it is part of a 54-card game design contest. So I'm sure that Charles would love feedback if any of you play it.
All right, sounds great.
Let's see if I can get the time and resources to print that up and try it ourselves. But in the meantime, let's talk about some Room to Grow.
What we do with this segment, our goal with the Room to Grow segment, is really to help you bring your kids through a series of games that grow in complexity. Why do we do this? We do this because a lot of the people listening to the podcast are gamers, and sometimes you might not have the resources that will help you help your kids grow through these games into the ones that you really want to play. And so we've put this program, I'll call it, this topic series together, Room to Grow, to help you help your kids grow in this way. So normally we do three of these. We start with a very simple game in whatever the core mechanic
genre
is.
Yeah.
In this case, we're doing Roll and Rights, and then we go to something progressively more complicated, and then even more complicated still. This week we're doing four.
Yeah, because Roll and Rights captures so much complexity and so many other things that they can touch, that we wanted to really hit both ends of the spectrum, which left us with way too much room in between.
So another thing that's really important to discuss as we talk about this is we actually left out games that heavily rely on numbers and sequencing.
Yeah, so we discussed this a lot before the show. And since we're talking about Room to Grow, we decided that we would avoid those number-heavy games because it requires another set of skills that might make some of these games too frustrating, even if the basic problem-solving skills are there. For example, I personally love Quingo, and I would call it a very, very simple roll and write. But it is extremely number-heavy, and you need to do both sequencing of numbers and have a good idea of probability and the amount of space between two numbers, like how much can fit in there.
And that is just really hard for a kid to do. It's very much an intangible skill set.
Yeah. It's one that they'll develop over time, you know, through doing math in school and lots of exposure to numbers, but it's probably not great to start there.
So let's start this whole process. And the game that we've selected as our first in this Room to Grow Roll and Write series is a game that features something that kids are very good at.
Coloring!
Coloring. And that is Color It from Haba.
In Color It by Haba, we reviewed this a little while ago, you're rolling dice, and then you match up the number and the color that are shown on the dice, and do that same color in a corresponding numbered area on your coloring sheet. It's a very simple game. As an adult, it's a nice way to kind of unwind with it. And again, as an adult or a more experienced child, there are more complicated coloring sheets available specifically for this game online.
One of the great things about this game is that a bunch of other publishers and a bunch of other organizations have actually worked with Haba to release coloring sheets that work with Color It. And you can just download them freely and print them and play. And it's great.
It really is wonderful, and I like that a lot about it, that even within this simple game, there is room to grow.
I see what you did there.
You sure did. But our next step up is a fairly small one, but it's for anybody who's like, okay, I get the coloring, but I want to do something. I want to go somewhere. And for that, we would recommend Dungeon Academy.
So Dungeon Academy is an interesting twist on the roll and write genre, where everybody is using a common set of dice, and it introduces a speed element and a little bit of strategy as well.
Yes. In Dungeon Academy, the dice form the dungeon that you all are trying to navigate through quickly. However, we're still keeping this on the low end of our roll and writes because you can choose how strategic you want to be. You know, you can really eke out every possible point, hit as many monsters as possible without dying. Or you can just be like, I can hit these four guys and I won't die. And that looks great. And maybe I'll get first.
So the key to that is, again, because this is a speed game, and we actually didn't anticipate this, and we just saw our youngest, Elliot, when he was four,
I think.
He would just draw a straight line through the dungeon. And, I mean, strategically, anybody who's trying to maximize their score and all this stuff would be like, well, why would you do that? But he got first every time, and so he could choose the first item every single time. He wasn't winning doing that, but he was engaged. He was playing the same game as everybody else. He was part of the competition.
Yeah.
You know, air quote. And he had a great time with it. And this is a game that kids can begin to understand all these extra mechanics and how they can balance, oh, maybe I should spend a little bit more time in the dungeon or exert some more effort trying to do these things versus I'm through and I get first place and I'm done. Ahaha, I beat you, right? That obsession that kids have with racing.
Yeah.
And it really does offer a little bit of an opportunity to grow within the game. The other thing that's really great about this, just like Color It, and just like a lot of Roll and Writes, is that a younger player can play with a group of people and mechanically they're in the game, but maybe they're not actually, you know, very competitive.
Yeah, maybe it's not competitive,
but everybody's still playing. I mean, it's not like you're playing a fake game or you're like, oh, well, this isn't going to be quite as, you know, good because the 5-year-old's playing or whatever. Like, everybody's still playing in the game.
Right.
And that's a really, really great thing about this.
So that one was Dungeon Academy from the OP.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You're ready for something a little bit more meaty.
Yeah. So now we're going to get into some games that are more complicated. I mean, again, this is Room to Grow. So we've gone through a couple of games that are really at a lower level that are a lot easier for kids to understand that don't have a lot of complex mechanics in them. Now we're getting into some stuff that does.
Our next recommendation in this line is Metro X. Yes, there are some numbers here, but mostly they're counting.
Yeah, they're not sequencing numbers in any way. So that's something that is helpful. I'll say it's, you don't have to keep a whole bunch of numbers in your head at the same time and try to figure out differences between them. And that's what, when we talked about the thing with Quingo, like, that's the thing that is really, really tough for a kid who maybe isn't great with arithmetic or doesn't really understand the difference between 20 and 40 versus, you know, 60 and 99. Kind of thing. So with Metro X, you are trying to plan train routes.
Yeah, and you are trying to fill in as many of those train routes as you can, but you're just doing it through a card gets drawn that tells you how many spaces you can go. Those spaces have to be contiguous. They can't be interrupted by anything. And you have some time there to work through and say, oh, well, if I did it here, I can only do 2 spaces in a row before I get blocked. But if I do it over here, I can do 3 or 4 spaces, but maybe that's not as helpful to me. So you can go back and forth with that. And it's another game where you can play and be in the game because you're on your own board without necessarily being competitive, but still feel like you're doing something. You know, you can compare against your own scores and not necessarily against mom and dad scores.
And this is another game, Color It, Dungeon Academy, we're the same way, that offers simultaneous play. So it's not piling on a whole bunch of new mechanics. And that was something that's really important for us as we look at this. So Dungeon Academy adds speed and it adds this route stuff in your strategy, adds those on top of Color It, which is really, there's a microscopic amount of strategy in Color It.
Yeah. I mean,
there is some, but it's not much. So then we add the speed stuff and a little bit of this route planning. Then in Metro X, that route planning is still there, right? So this is a skill that has been picked up from Dungeon Academy if you're, you know, following the prescribed Family Gamers order. But now you have to be a little bit more careful with your route planning because other numbers are coming into play at the same time. You now have multiple simultaneous routes, whereas with Dungeon Academy, it's only one route at a time.
Yeah.
So you're allowed to think a little bit more. There's really no speed element to Metro X, but we're layering the route planning on top with a little bit of luck still involved because if you get the right cards, you know, it might work for you, it might not work for someone else, that kind of thing. But it's getting progressively more complicated. We're piling the mechanics on top of each other or making the same mechanics more complex. And that really is what we are going for with Room to Grow.
It won't be a surprise to anybody that our final game in the Room to Grow Roll and Writes that are not number heavy math heavy, is Fleet the Dice Game.
Even though I just talked about building mechanics on top of each other, Fleet doesn't do any of that.
Yeah, no.
Fleet, there's just a lot going on in Fleet. And the thing that makes Fleet so complicated is that there's a lot of things to do and there's a lot of branching strategies.
It's that comboing feel. It's after I do this, that lets me do this over here, and then that gives me an extra, you know, set of coins, and then that gives me another star so I can fill in a circle somewhere else. And
that's absolutely true. And that is when I said before there's some things that can almost be overwhelming, that's exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah.
But more to the point, unlike any of the three games that we've started with, Fleet the Dice Game has different potential winning strategies. With Color It or with Dungeon Academy or with Metro X, there's really only one thing that you're trying to do, right? You're trying to maximize your routes. You're trying to maximize the number of red and blue creatures that you kill while making sure that you don't actually die in Dungeon Academy. Mm-hmm. Right? But the goals are always the same. With Fleet, it's a complex enough roll and write where you can say things like, you know what? I really like income, so I'm going to get a lot of lobster boats because the lobster license gives me more money. Or I really want to get a lot of fish as fast as possible, so I'm going to go with oysters. Or I want money for launching boats, so I'm going to go with cod. And those things all are going to affect what you decide to do in the wharf and what buildings you take in the wharf.
Yeah.
And so you have branching strategy paths in Fleet the Dice Game, which you
from the very beginning. Yeah.
From the very beginning, which you don't see in these other three games. And that really is the thing that makes it so much more complicated. Because if you try to do a little dip in everything in Fleet, you've lost. You can't do it. I've tried to do that. You cannot win that way.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to pick something and commit to it. And it might be determined by whatever your initial die roll is.
Yeah, you have to dip a little bit in and out in the first round or two of the game because you don't know what kinds of dice are going to show up.
Everybody starts with a license and a boat.
Right.
You roll a die, you get a license and a boat and whatever that thing is. Right. So you have something, but you're right. Depending on what those first boat rolls are, it might change your strategy.
Yeah.
So the point is you have to be flexible and you have to be willing to change your strategy based on what you're seeing happening in front of you if you want to be successful. Those are hard things to do.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. And in that way, I actually think that Fleet is a little more complicated than Merchants of Magic.
I think you're probably right. We had this discussion beforehand offline.
Did I flip my opinion on which one was more complicated?
No, you said Fleet was more complicated. I said it felt less complicated, but that's because I am overwhelmed by the sheer amount of numbers in Merchants of Magic. Just like in Role Player versus Sagrada. In Sagrada, I can see the patterns forming on the board.
Okay.
And in Role Player, I have to constantly go back and do the math over and over and over again.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So that's it. Fleet is very complicated because of the branching strategies. And it can be overwhelming because of all of the chaining events.
But if you're looking for something more complex, more meaty than Metro X or than Welcome To or something like that, we really like Fleet.
Yes.
We really, really like it.
There are a lot of fantastic roll and writes. I mean, the genre over the last couple of years has really exploded.
Yeah.
Right. So you've got your cartographers and you've got all sorts of stuff, silver and gold, things like that. There's many, many, many roll and writes that are available. There's like 700 different kinds of Welcome To at this point. There's a lot out there. We just picked four that we really like and we think well represent this idea of moving from simple to complex. And again, we eschewed most of the numeracy stuff because it makes things more complex in a parallel way that we wanted to avoid.
You shouldn't always need really strong math skills to play a reasonably meaty game.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So that is Room to Grow, Roll and Write Edition. What do you think? Do you think there's other games that maybe we could have included in this list that we didn't? If so, there's lots of different ways that you can let us know.
You can contact us on most social media at FamilyGamersAA.
Yep, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram that way.
We can, of course, discuss this in the Family Gamers community, as we've already mentioned. Either get there through thefamilygamers.com/community or go to facebook.com/groups/FamilyGamersAA.
Or if you just want to send us a message, you want to send us an email, you can do that. You can email me, Andrew, at thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra at thefamilygamers.com.
If you like what we're doing, you would like to help support the Family Gamers, and you would like to look cool while you're doing it, you can check out our Family Gamers and Play Games with Your Kids merchandise at thefamilygamers.com/merch.
Or just look for the t-shirt on our homepage.
Yep.
If we did not do a good enough job with this for science and you want us to eat weirder things, send us something.
Oh, boy. You can send them to The Family Gamers, P.O. Box 528, Auburn, Massachusetts, 01501. And it will end up in my mouth.
Maybe mine if it's not too gross.
Please don't forget to subscribe to the show, tell your friends about the show, and leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find us on Amazon Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify.
Hooray! Of course, The Family Gamers is sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points. Thank you so much to First Move Financial for being our sponsor.
They are a wonderful partner to The Family Gamers, and we are very, very thankful for them. Well, I am super excited for next week's show.
Me too.
And I cannot wait to bring it to our listeners.
It's going
to
be great.
But that's not until next week.
Well, until then, play games with your kids.